So, welcome back everyone to another incredible episode of Chat with Dan here. For today, what can I say? We have the incredible, the amazing, the badass, the superstar, the legendary, the one and only, the super, the awesome Lexi. Lexi, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Dan?
I'm fantastic. And what a better way to start up a badass weekend than to be chatting with someone as badass as you. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Great way to start my weekend talking to you too.
There you go. Now, so those who are recently tuning in, thank you so much. If you're new to the channel, don't forget to leave a like, subscribe, follow. Helps a lot. But most important, on the description below, you're going to find all of Lexi's social media. Let's follow her. Let's make her viral. Hashtag Team Lexi. I mean, we all know why she's a total badass. And if you are new to this, well, I'm going to leave also in the description all of the episodes she's been, so you could be like, oh, now I get it too. Now, without furthermore, let's jump in here. So for today, it's a whole different thing here, right? I will be asking you, like, what are your opinions about how the acting industry will be in the next 5 to 10 years, right? Now, that being said, I will just start with the first question, which is, with the rise of streaming platforms and on-demand content, how do you foresee the future of traditional cinema over the next 10 years?
Yeah. Are you talking about in terms of going to the theater and like seeing a film in the theater versus streaming at home? Mm-hmm. We've definitely already seen it change. I do think that any movie that is, you know, big action film or, you know, war films, things like that, people do still enjoy the big screen aspect of it. So I think that there is still a market for it and it's not entirely going to go away. However, I think we are going to see that change where in order to go see a movie, spend the money on the theater, it has to be an experience, right? So there's a lot of theaters, almost all theaters are like doing the reclining chairs now, a lot of dinner theaters where you can like order food and drinks at your seat you're seeing come out. At least I'm experiencing this in the big cities in Los Angeles and New York. But then on top of that, I know for me, I'm intrigued to go when there's talkbacks or Q&As or anything like that after the film. So I'd be curious to see if more of that will happen for a mainstream audience in a way that like there is sort of a bonus to going to the theater and then they can charge more for it. Because I think we're definitely already seeing a drop in the amount of people that go to the theater for, you know, an average film. So I do think we'll see that change, but I don't think it's going to go away completely. Just like, it's not like film replaced theater, right? It is a different experience. And there are some films that are like more fun to watch in an audience full of people, right? I think Barbie mm-hmm. was so much more fun with a group of people, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oppenheimer as well. So
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's room for everyone basically. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, how do you think advancements in technology, you know, like deepfake AI and virtual reality, will influence the acting profession?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everybody's really concerned about that right now, because, and this is one of the big debates that we were having for the contracts during the strike with SAG. And we've made some progress in the contract, although it's not as much as a lot of actors had hoped. I still haven't read everything in the contract, but from what I understand, like you do have to allow them to scan your appearance for certain roles. And I think part of that comes with, you know, any sort of CGI that might be added to a film. And people are scared that then, you know, their image will be used in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. However, I've also heard some people talking about, you know, well, if that is going to be the reality of things, at least can I like own the rights to my image? So, for example, if they continue to make virtual characters out of my image, even after I die, is like the owning the rights to my image something that I can then pass on down to my family so that then at least me and my family are profiting from my image being used. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely scary. There's some things that it affords us as far as imagination goes. You know, we wouldn't have Game of Thrones, we wouldn't have Star Wars in the same way if it weren't for all of these technological advancements. So in some ways it's exciting. And then I also hope that, you know, just like I would say the Star Wars movies, you know, 1, 2, and 3 that came out in the 90s, they went too far with CGI. Like, no one liked Jar Jar Binks, for example, right? Like, mm-hmm. it was too much. It was weird. And so they ended up going back to as much, you know, real props and organic costumes and things that they could. I'm forgetting the term for that, the practical props. Mm-hmm. As opposed to CGI. So I think that there are some things that like people are going to try to push the limits and then we'll pull back. You know, we're going to see like, okay, can you tell the difference between a Lifetime Christmas movie that's written entirely by AI or not? Like, and so I hope that there is still, there's something human that cannot be replaced by technology. I think what we need to do is learn to utilize the technology to our advantage and get ahead of the rules around it. I think it's one thing that our generation regrets about social media is we didn't really get ahead of it and understand what it would do to us and like where we needed to have rules and boundaries around it. So hopefully we've learned a little bit from that experience and we will get ahead of this a little bit. I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah. 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 I do think that even though, you know, with technology that is going to be, you know, top notch, super top notch at some point. And even though an AI perhaps at some point can write or create an incredible, amazing story, mm-hmm. there's going to be a moment that people are going to be wanting the human side to it. You know, I mean, we right. want, I mean, we love to kind of, what's the word here? To have like a sense of, you know, like a feeling to it, you know, we can, you know, mm-hmm. once you discover who write it, to be like, I can totally like relate to that, you know, things like that. So I think right. I mean, we love it, so maybe they will use it for sure. Perhaps it's gonna work, but at some point people are gonna be, you know, like we want the human again, you know, we need it, you know, we want those mistakes, you know, like things that happen, we want that. So
mm-hmm. yeah, there's some sort of like,
you know,
awe and just human aspect. I mean, even from books to film, like there are certain moments that you don't even fully understand until you see an actor perform it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just different, we all have different experiences that we bring to it. And at this point, AI can have a theoretical understanding of that, but cannot actually replicate the experience. So it can't give the same performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with many actors transitioning to roles behind the camera, right, such as directors or producers as well, do you see this trend kind of intensifying in the near future?
Yeah, definitely. I think that with Instagram and TikTok, you see a lot of people creating a lot of their own content. I think that is going to continue. I think it is going to continue to be an avenue for some, you know, young up-and-comers. Especially people who do comedy and character work and stuff. They make funny videos online. I also think like there are some actors who just want to show up and be a puppet, right? Like, show me where to go. I'll do what you want me to do. Give me the words to say. But most actors I know, at least the ones in the circles that I run in, are creators and storytellers, mm-hmm. right? So we've chosen and we enjoy the actual performance part of it, but we are storytellers at heart. And there, that has been a profession that is, you know, as old as time. And so, for example, I in New York go to this weekly script reading that is all new works in development. And we read 10 minutes of 5 new pieces of work. And it's all pretty much actors, writers, directors that go to this event. And almost all of the people that you meet there, if they're an actor, they will also sometimes write, or they'll be inspired to write, or they're working on something that they want to submit. And then even the writers will get up on stage and read. So I think it is just such a collaborative art form, and people do sort of flow between each side of it. And you'll see that with TV too, like the first season of a new TV show. You know, the actors are just actors. By the second and third season, several of those actors will either lean towards becoming one of the producers of the show, and several of them will lean towards directing a few episodes every season. So I think most of us have that in us already. And in a world where we're unsure of the future of the industry, the answer is always to go back to our core and create art. So yeah, I do think that we'll see more and more of that for sure.
Mm, there you go. All right. Now, as the world becomes, you know, like more environmentally conscious, I hate that word, but anyway, how might the industry adapt in terms of film production practices and on-set sustainability?
Mm. That's a tough one because I don't quite understand what the footprint of, you know, the eco footprint of a film production would be. Obviously, it's more if there's a lot of destination shots, you know, if they're, mm-hmm. if you're taking a lot of flights, you're moving a lot of people and equipment across the world, that would contribute to it a lot. There's definitely a lot of energy used between lights and the trucks that carry everything back and forth and the trailers. So I think it will start with small changes. I think one you already see is most sets request that you bring a reusable water bottle to set, mm-hmm. so that they mm-hmm. way less plastic water bottles. You know, I think that might even move into like reusable coffee mugs for coffee all day on set. Hopefully it will move, you know, the trailers will eventually be fully electric vehicles instead of, and the trucks as well. So I think there's a lot of small changes that like will ripple effect through the industry that hopefully will make some difference. Shooting more locally could help. Honestly, some of the technology like CGI, you know, is instead of flying an entire crew to Croatia to get this certain background, mm-hmm. it can be done with green screen. So there are ways in which it can become more eco-friendly. But I think it's going to change at the same rate as the rest of the world, maybe a little bit faster because the entertainment industry tends to be pretty liberal. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. definitely important to those people. And New York and California, to the biggest places, you know, markets for the industry in the States, at least, are pretty liberal states and pretty liberal cities. So they are already making some strides. You know, even on the actor side, you know, we used to have printed copies of a resume and mm-hmm. photos we bring everywhere. Now it's mostly digital, mostly emailed. And even the fact that we're self-taping auditions means less foot traffic and gas and everything used to get to auditions. So, you know, it's definitely changing. I don't know that we're the most guilty industry.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. I've heard also that there are some, for example, directors that they will use for the lighting, the light of day. And sometimes that tends to be like a little bit chaotic because if you're going to shoot in a specific scene, either sunrise or things like that, you need to be like on cue. And if that thing is missing or if or by any chance it got lost, and then you need to wait for the next day. And that tends to be like a little bit more stressing and things like that. But yeah. I think it's cool. So,
yeah, I mean, that definitely is a concern. But daylight always looks beautiful. There's also, I mean, when it comes to lighting, the light, you know, lamps, light bulbs and everything are getting so much more eco-friendly and efficient, you know, between LED and mostly the LED, and they last so much longer. So
Or they can use like this dome technology that we have seen like on social media. I think in Vegas, right, they have like this dome now that they recently have, something like that. And I've heard also that Disney has also this kind of dome that for specific scenes, like in the last show, The Mandalorian, they will be using it to have like this incredible landscape, but they are on set, you know, they're, you know, and that's pretty cool. So
I also feel like there's more room for solar panels too. Like, you know, all of the studios covered their roofs with solar panels. I'm sure that could power some of the lights as well.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I really hope that at some point that technology can be like more accessible to everyone, you know?
Yeah.
That would help a lot. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, do you anticipate a shift in the type of stories or narratives that will be popular or prioritized in the next decade?
Well, there's something I've been hoping for a while, and I'm curious. I feel like it's starting to go in this direction. Don't get me wrong, I love a good superhero movie. I would love to play a superhero. I think it's super fun. But people are, I think, getting a little bit tired of it. There's been, I don't even know the number of Marvel movies that are in like the Marvel universe at this point. And I will say that like they are the directors and the writers keep raising the bar, right? Like these shows are beautiful human stories, and they some of them are even political, and so they are doing a good job of telling these stories. Like I don't know if you watched Loki,
Oh yeah.
but I watched the second season of Loki, and it was
Incredible.
beautiful. Like the story that was told, and like Tom Middleton's performance, and it was a really well done show. And so it's not that like it's not great stories being told, but I do think people are missing a little bit of these more human slice of life, as they call it, type movies, these like independent films and stuff. And it's not that they're not being made anymore. I think that they have moved to television, like what might have been an independent film 20 years ago might now be like a 6 to 10 episode limited series on HBO or Netflix now. But I do think that we are at a point where we're ready for some more human stories, especially at this point where we're grappling with AI. It's all becoming very real to us. And I think although we're addicted to our technology, we're also all keenly aware of how sick of it we are, right? Like, I think part of the reason, with Matthew Perry dying and people going back to watching Friends, there's been a lot of talk of like, why are we so obsessed with this show? It hasn't aged well. Like, it's homophobic. It's like kind of racist. It's like, it's all of these things that didn't stand up. But there's something about it that like it's before cell phones. They're all so present with each other, and they hang out with actual people every day. And it's these friends that they see. In, I read an article where they called it pajama friends, where it's like people that you see in your pajamas that like you don't have to be like, done up or put on or anything. You just like walk out of your room and there's your friends. And we miss that from like 20 years ago. And so there's something about like more community and human interaction and those kinds of stories that I think we're all craving a little bit, that I hope to see more of in the future. I do think it's needed. I don't think people I think the problem is, as with anything, and also, see strike. But it is a problem between corporate and artist, right? I think that there's been a huge shift in the last 30 years that like, just like we see in the economy, where like the middle class is getting smaller and smaller, right? And so we have the upper class and lower class. And the same thing happens in an industry where like the everyday working artists, from the gaffers and the PAs and the, five line actors, and indie directors and stuff, to the CEOs of these companies of Netflix, Amazon, Apple, Disney. Like the gap is humongous, and there's not as much communication, and there's not as much influence from the actual artists up to what's getting made. And so the reason that like at this corporate level they're making the decisions to churn out as many fucking Star Wars and Marvel movies as they can is because they know that there's an art audience for it. So there's a built-in income structure. And so they can guarantee that even if it doesn't do critically well, it will still do well enough at the box office. So what needs to happen is the supply and demand, right? Is that people need to get sick of those movies and stop going to them for the people at the corporate level to agree to make anything else that's going to be a little bit more of a risk for them. So I hope that at the corporate level they're willing to take more risk, and I hope that at the audience level there's more demand for a different type of story.
You know, it's interesting because you're not the first person who has told me that they're kind of a little bit sick of the whole Marvel stuff. like for most of the actors that I have speaking with over the past few months, when I bring this, you know, this question to the table, the answer is always the same one, the Marvel, because it's true. I mean, to be honest, the same thing happened to me. I mean, I'm a huge a fan of Marvel, DC. I love their films, but to me at least, was Avengers Endgame was the biggest one, was super cool, was amazing. To me, it felt like, okay, we're done. We're gonna tell new stories at some point, but you know, hang on. But instead, they just kept releasing, you know, on and on and on and on and on. And then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 came, and I was like, okay, huge fan as well. I'm gonna see it. And to me, that also felt like an ending to me, like, okay, I'm done. You know, it's cool, yeah. But you know, it's true. I mean, it's getting into a point in which there are no more excitement as back then when you were, you know, they're gonna release a new Avengers film, you know, or they're gonna release a new Spider-Man film, you know, things like that. I do think also that people is just tired of it, you know. And for example, shows like Loki, I do think that perhaps people loved it because it didn't went for the typical superhero thing, you know. It went more into a kind of a human side that at some point you're like, oh wow, you know. And but yeah, I do hope that they can stop at least for a couple of years, you know, and people would be happy if they would be like, you know what guys, we're not gonna release anything regarding superheroes in the next 5-6 years. We're gonna, you know, regroup, replan the whole thing. We'll see you in 5 years. And people will be happy. We'll be like, yeah, sure, take your time. But and then when you come back, people are gonna be like, okay, we're excited now. We haven't seen this for a while. Where is it? You know, instead of be releasing, like, I don't know, like in the last 2 years, they have released over what, like 10, 15 films, something like that. And to be honest, back then I used to have like keep track on it, you know, like the whole thing. And now I'm just like, I'm lost already. I don't know like where the story is
So
right
much to
now.
keep up with. It's like I go back and I'm like, oh my God, it's been 6 months since I've seen one, and now it's like I have two TV shows to watch to catch up. And then also, like with Marvel and Star Wars is similar, where like it's not that they're not good. Like I just watched Andor and I loved it.
Yeah,
I
it's
thought
really
that
cool.
show was great. But now I'm like, okay, now I'm going to Ahsoka. And I started to watch it and I was like, there is so much I don't know. 'Cause like I never watched the animated Clone Wars or whatever. And that's where most of her story comes from. And so I have to like research and watch like explanatory videos just to watch the TV show. And I'm like, I am a person who's a fan and a nerd and all of that, but like I don't want to have to do research to like sit down on my couch and watch a
Yeah,
TV show.
no, yeah, no.
So yeah, it's just too much to keep up with, and I don't think that they need to stop. I just think that I wish that they would put, you know, more just put more budget and more stuff into one really great series a year, one really great movie, and then allocate money for something else. Like think about something like Back to the Future, you know, like when that came out, we'd never seen anything like that before. And so, what can the new thing be? Like, can we have something new and exciting to come out? And then on the Disney side too, I love to see when Pixar is doing something new. Like, you know, we have a lot of princess movies, and I love a good princess movie, but something like Soul that came out was a beautiful movie. So I'd rather see inventive, creative stories that make you think, you know. Which is what art is supposed to do, right? It's supposed to be put a mirror up against the world, and that's like the job of the artist. So,
Yeah, I do think that for at this point, like for Marvel and Star Wars, it's like you need to have a degree on it. You know, like literally, because you need
Oh,
to.
I'm sure there's college classes being taught about them.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, the same thing happened with Ahsoka. I did watch the animated one, so I was like, oh, okay, you know, but
Right.
a lot of people who watch the animated, they were like, this new Ahsoka show, it's like the another season, and like a lot, yeah, like a live show of the last season from one of the animated shows. That's
Oh,
it,
interesting.
you
Right.
know. But yeah, it would be nice if we can see like new stuff. And also another thing that to me bothers me, it's remakes. I'm done with remakes. You know, you can create like another story, you know, as you mentioned, like Soul back then, that it was amazing, or like Up back then was also amazing. I mean, you can I mean, you can create something new on it, and also it would be cool if they can also kind of put new stuff, you know, like indie stuff into the table as well. You know, there are so many cool projects who don't have like this huge amount of a budget behind them, and they still manage to create a cool narrative, a cool story.
Yeah.
And I do think that is what people want these days now. You know, I think that we are like at this point in which people are asking for something new. And now that you mentioned, you know, like Friends and everything, I don't remember the last time when we saw like a show like that. I think the last one I saw was in the kind of like that. I think it was the Big Bang Theory, and that was the last one. And I don't remember that they released like another one, you know, like regarding that, you know, because yeah, they're fun, and it's
girl.
And
yeah
yeah, and it's so cool the fact that they can create something amazing with just a group of guys here just chatting about, you know, like that type,
yeah.
as you mentioned, like that feeling is something that I do think that, yeah, it's kind of missing. Yeah.
Do you know what a bottle episode is?
No.
So in a show like that, in a sitcom, you know, they have a number of sets, and especially in a multi-cam sitcom where it is filmed live, almost like theater, like they rehearse that, you know, they get the script and they rehearse it all week, and then they have a live audience and they shoot it all in one night. But there's like the main sets, like in Friends, you would have the girls' apartment, the boys' apartment, the coffee shop, the hallway. Maybe there'd be like Phoebe's apartment. Maybe there'd be like a street scene, right? But anything that was like not those main few sets would be extra money, right? Like it would be an extra set that they'd have to build that week. It would be like, okay, we got to get an outside shot. Maybe we have to go on location somewhere. And that's a bigger budget. So usually at some point during the season, when the budget's getting a little tighter and they have to save some money for an next episode or something, they do what's called a bottle episode, which means the entire episode takes place in one setting. So it's either, so on Friends, it might be like both of the apart, it might be the boys and the girls apart. Apartments, but like maybe they don't even go to the coffee shop. It's just two sets. And it's so interesting because some of those episodes on various TV shows are some of the best episodes of television, because there's something about giving an artist parameters that almost, like, even though it's more pressure, it's like a pressure cooker, it actually makes you do better work. And like a great example from Friends is the one where no one's ready is the name of the episode, and like, they're all going to some event for Ross, and the entire thing takes place in Monica and Rachel's apartment, of them all like getting ready for this event. But yeah, I think like it is interesting when we move into this world where we have less rules. Like in streaming, you'll notice some episodes are 30 minutes, some episodes are 43 minutes. Like they have this flexibility because they don't have to fit in on like a TV schedule with like commercial breaks and everything. And so sometimes when we have too much freedom in that way, like the writers aren't cutting where they need to cut to make the story more efficient. And the Gilmore Girls Netflix like seasons that came out a few years ago is a great example of this, because there was just no parameters and these episodes were kind of like all over the place. Like they were so great. Like they just weren't what it used to be, because like you took away some of the rules and parameters away. So like the artist went wild, you know? So anyway, I brought that up to say that, yeah, I think having sort of focusing a story in that way, like those TV shows are, on just like this group of friends, this, you know, there's enough, you know, Seinfeld is like that, Big Bang Theory, I think, The Good Place a little bit, The Office, Parks and Rec, you know, there's a lot of these TV shows that are about this group of people, and we don't leave that space very often, but it makes for some great human telling stories.
Yeah, like The Office, you know, that is definitely one of my favorite shows by far, and I still, and it's so interesting because, for example, with my friends, everyone is watching old stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like we go back to watch The Office or Two and a Half Men, Friends, The Big Bang Theory, yeah, like old stuff, because we were like having this conversation that there's no point now, like, you know, like the new stuff that is coming. And I do think that maybe they're like investing too much in technology. That yeah, it looks amazing and it's wow, it's incredibly detailed. But sometimes a good, you know, like a good old comedy, it's all that we need, you know, something so simple.
Comforting too, I think, in a time like the world where it feels like the world is falling apart, people comfort, and there's something about the nostalgia of shows that we know that gives us a little bit of comfort.
Yeah, I miss those days. Anyway, right now, how do you think the role of film festivals will evolve, given the increasing accessibility of digital platforms for showcasing new talent?
Like, you mean having sort of digital film festivals instead of in-person necessarily?
Or like for example, that, let's say here, right? Me, I can watch a film festival in, I don't know, that is happening in Toronto, Vancouver, LA, things like that.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a great added bonus to the film festivals that you could sell a ticket for that. You know, like I can sell a digital ticket and get more eyes in front of the film. I think that's a great sort of added financial benefit to keep, because I know it's expensive to keep a film festival afloat. But I think that the reason people go to film festivals is to get recognition, to network, to find people to purchase the film and distribute it. And I think all of that is still better done in person, right? Like we can have a Zoom meeting and get to know each other pretty well, but it still is not quite the same as getting to sort of experience film together and then go have a drink afterwards and have a conversation and meet some other people. So I think that whole, the social aspect of film festivals can't quite be replaced. But I do think it's an added bonus to sell tickets. I wonder though, you know, if you're already selling, like, I feel like there has to be a limit on the number of tickets that you sell digitally, because part of the reason, like, some distribution companies are willing to purchase a film is because people haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. So you want to, like, reserve the ability to watch it online for, you know, when it does eventually hit Hulu or Netflix or whoever buys it. Yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, but especially for short films, I think it'd be great if they're, you know, I think, is it Apple TV or Netflix that does, like, before the Oscars, you can, like, purchase, like, an hour of short films to watch, like the ones that have been nominated or something.
I think it's Netflix. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I that stuff so. Is great. I feel like once they've been through the circuit, like, not a ton of people are watching short films outside of film festivals, I think. So I think it would be great to see more of that show up on the streamer services, and like the ability for more people to see them, because I think it's a very valid and wonderful art form. But I would be weary of, like, you still want to make those connections, and I still want independent artists to make back their money on film.
Yeah, I mean, I do hope that at some point I get the chance to have that it's more accessible for me to watch either short films or indie stuff, you know, because sometimes I need to search between apps, or sometimes, like, dig into the internet so I can finally find it, and that tends to be, like, a little bit annoying. And the other day, an actress told me that she took a flight, I don't know where, was it for Vancouver? Anyway, but the airline, while they were flying, the airline were just focusing on short films. So that was pretty cool. I was like, okay, I would like that, you know? You know, you are in a, I don't know, like a 2-3 hour flight, and they could put like some short films so you can watch. I would appreciate that more instead of watching a movie that I already watched, you know, which sometimes I tend to do that, you know, things like that. So yeah, I do hope that at some point it can get, like, more access. I mean, I know there is an app called Tubi that focuses, like, more into the whole indie stuff, which is great. But still, I mean, with some of the actors that I have interviewed, when they release a project, for me, it's a pain in the butt for me to kind of find what they did, you know. And sometimes, it takes hours sometimes. So yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Anyway, now, with mental health becoming a prominent discussion, do you see the industry adopting practices or policies for support actors and crews well-being more effectively?
I hope so. I would say it is difficult to get SAG insurance. You have to make quite a bit of money every year through SAG gigs in order to get the insurance. Once you get it, it is really good. There are also the Entertainment Fund is a great nonprofit that also supports artists, and I think they have some free therapy services, and they can help you find a therapist. So there are services out there already. I would say in terms of practices, what I would hope to see moving forward, and if I ever, you know, am a showrunner or executive producer, which I hope to be someday, I would just design the days on set better. Like, I think that because of budget, we are like encouraged to do these, you know, 12, 14 hour days on set. And it's not necessary. Like, I think
it's crazy.
We can have a more humane schedule so that people can have more work-life balance. They can, you know, maybe someone that's on set can actually get home to have dinner with their kids. You know, I think those sort of small work-life balance change, they seem small, but like they would be big in terms of budget, and they would be big in terms of the effect that it would have on people's lives. So yeah, I think better hours would be huge. You know, it would mean definitely a little higher budget and a longer shoot time for a movie. For TV show schedules aren't too crazy from what I understand, you know, like during like the rehearsal process stuff, the hours aren't too long on a multi-cam sitcom, but single cam and, you know, like an HBO type show, like this could definitely be longer hours. I'm sure Game of Thrones, that type of TV show, their hours are just as insane as film, if not more. So yeah, I think better hours. And as far as on-set culture, I think we've definitely already seen quite a few changes. I think the more female directors and females in places of power that we can get will help change the culture a little bit. And then, and I say that in terms of sexual harassment, in terms of, I don't mean to generalize, but emotional intelligence. And compassion. I think that women have a little bit more of that when it comes to managing a team. So I like to see more women in power because of that. And then the other thing I would say is having intimacy coordinators on set. There's intimacy coordinators for everything now. And some people are like, it feels a little excessive, because even if there's like a peck on the lips now, it seems like there's an intimacy coordinator, but it's a good thing. It is there to protect everyone and prevent sexual harassment and make sure everyone feels comfortable. So there are changes that have happened, I would say, in the last 5 to 10 years that I would hope to see more of and that I think would help with mental health. And just having the conversations, and we're seeing it as a subject matter in more TV shows, and films and podcasts, and, you know, people are talking about it. And I think our generation and younger have normalized therapy and working on yourself in a way that just did not exist in the generations before us.
There you go. That is a badass answer. Just saying, I love it. There you go. I like it. Now, how do you feel about the rise of short form content? Like, you know, what we see on TikTok, YouTube, so on and on. So do you think this will influence the type of content produced or the length of films and shows for the future?
I definitely think it already has. I know my own attention span is shorter, but it's been interesting because maybe 10 years ago, I was on a mission to watch more classic films because there were a lot of films that I hadn't seen. I was a theater major, not a film major. And so I was already trying to catch up with classic theater in college, and I hadn't gone back and tried to catch up with classic film. And when I went back and I was watching things like Casablanca and Sunset Boulevard and the Hitchcock movies and everything, they're very long. And I'll never forget, what's the one? Oh my God, now I'm blanking on the name of it, but with Christopher Walken and Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro, Deer Hunter. It took me like 3 sittings to get through that movie. It's a great movie, but it's very interesting because storytelling has changed in the sense that, like, there's a wedding scene in the beginning of that film that's like 10 or 15 minutes long. And if that were shot today, it would be 2 minutes. Like, because there's like 2 plot points we need from that scene. and the rest of it is just fluff and culture, like, mm-hmm. which is great, but it's not the attention span that people have today. And then last year we saw a resurgence of 3-hour films. So I don't know, there's like some back and forth. Like there were several of the Oscar nominated movies last year were like pushing 3 hours or more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think although our attention spans have changed, people are pushing the limits on both ends. I don't think short form content is going away. I think mm-hmm. definitely, I know for myself, like I am sort of trained and I live alone, like to eat my meal watching content, mm-hmm. but I'm like, it doesn't take me a full half an hour to watch, to eat my meal. So maybe I'm going to put on a short YouTube video or something mm-hmm. just to entertain me while I eat. So I do think that we're going to continue to see more content that way. I think we're going to continue to see independent artists utilize, you know, the way different ways that you can make money off of those platforms. But I don't know where it's going to go from here, right? Because like I said, I see a lot of comedy and characters and stand up and things like that in short form content. But I don't see much drama on that short form content. So I'd be curious to see, like, are we going to ever see drama or action move to short form content?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, perhaps the long, I mean, yeah, like the 3-hour, those would be great to see it on the cinema. But still, there's a point in which you're like, you know, you're like, okay, now is it gonna be over? You know,
Or like, are we gonna have an intermission? Because that 3 hours, mm-hmm. like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Like,
yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, like for Oppenheimer, it was something like about that.
Yeah.
And it went to a point in which I was like, okay, I need to go, you know, I need to go pee. But yeah. The whole thing is going on. So is there like a moment in which, perhaps that would be like the solution to it. Like the Godfather did, you know, like the old ones, you know,
the first one had intermission. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's perfect. You get the time to go, you know, to go to the bathroom, go get a refill on your soda, popcorn, go back.
Especially if we are, you know, in these big, gorgeous theaters that are like have recliners and you're going to order food and drinks, like, let us take a break, go get more drinks, go do your thing. You know, like the theaters need you to spend money because they need people, you know, they give people this experience. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. We'll see what happens. But yeah. Now, do you anticipate any shift in how actors are trained or educated for their careers in the future?
I would like to see it. I don't know. I think what I would like to see, I have really strong feelings about this based on my education, is I would like to train actors more for the business of acting, which you see a lot of classes popping up for that after you graduate, but especially in MFA programs and conservatory programs, they focus so much on the acting that they don't teach you what to do when you get out of school. And it really sets people up for failure. So I really would like to see more of the business taught in classes. And when you're talking about short form content and all of that, teach people to make their own content, teach people about, like, if you're going to have a career as an actor, here are the different routes you could go. You know, are you going to be a regional theater actor? Are you going to be a theater and Broadway actor? Are you going to be a touring actor? Are you going to be TV, film? You know, are you going to be short form? Are you going to make your own content? Are you going to go the independent film route and go to festivals? And I think most actors are like, yes, all of it. But then you become incredibly unfocused and it's just too much to tackle at once. So I think that, like, teaching everybody about the different routes you can go, what it means, how to manage your finances. I would love to see more of that, you know, how to apply for grants for creative projects, how to produce your own projects, how to find funding for projects. These are all things that are a part of the job and the career that is really just not taught or not at the level that really sets people up for success. So if it is a career in which you don't need a degree. So it's quite an investment to go and spend, especially if you're getting a 4-year degree. So if you are going to take someone's money for a four-year degree, I think that it is the ethical thing to do to actually set them up for success.
There you go. Love it. That is amazing. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they should apply that all, you know,
in every industry.
Yeah, on all of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I hate back when I went to college and they were telling me like, oh, you know, you're going to have, this is the best opportunity for you, the best career. You chose the best career. You're going to have all this incredible opportunities here and there, you know, amazing. And once you finish, you realize that this whole bunch of, yeah, that it's a lie. And then you find a job and then you find out you are sitting next to lawyers, nutritionists, doctors, technicians, writers, everywhere. And you're like, huh, you're too, huh? And they're like, yeah, me too. Okay. So I do hope that you know, that could change at some point, because yeah, it's ridiculous. Or I don't know, or perhaps they could. Yeah, I'm just rambling right now, but yeah. Anyway,
I mean, I think that we should teach actors to be entrepreneurs, or like them to have another skill right off the bat, because you have to have a flexible lifestyle. And even at the top level, you have, you know, all of these famous actors who start their own alcohol company, their own skincare line, their own perfume. You see people creating these other businesses. And part of it is because, okay, now they have the money and the capital to start a business if they want to and follow another passion. But part of it is because what they're doing is setting up another consistent income so that like they don't have to worry if they don't do a film for 6 months. So even at this high level, people have to have multiple careers. And so I think that we should teach people how to do that. You know, what are their skills you have? Can you work for yourself as a graphic designer? Can you, you know, whatever it is, I think we need to be teaching that to artists as well.
Yeah, totally. And when they are in high school, they should teach you how to pay your taxes, how to request a credit, how to properly use your credit, you know, things that they're like totally, that you totally need them when you finish. So I do think that at least for high school, I mean, depending, right, for general, instead of teaching you, I don't know, history again, be like, you know what, for this last semester, we're going to teach you how to pay your taxes, which is something that I do think that a lot of people, including me, when it's time to pay, it's like, oh, crap. You know, you get confused and everything. So that type of stuff, or, you know, how to request your credit, how to properly use it, what to do with your first salary. I do think that everyone around here, when they get your first salary, you use it in the, you just spend it in the most insignificant thing. So it should be better if they teach you how to invest money, you know, how to save things that are really useful, instead of things that at least to me, I mean, don't get me wrong, but back in high school, I did algebra and I didn't use algebra till this day.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so anyway, now as global politics and social issues become more intertwined with the entertainment industry, do you see actors taking on more activist roles in the future?
This is a tough one, especially as we become more and more divided, right? Because on one hand, you have a platform, and I think when you have an audience and you have a platform, it's a great way to, you know, spread something that's important to you, right? Or spread the values and have influence in that way. At the same time, the more vocal we are about it means, just like it's happened with Instagram and Facebook, right? Where like the people I follow are going to reiterate the points that I believe in. And so I'm going to continue to follow them, right? So if I, as an actor in this, in all of my interviews, am spewing all of my political beliefs, and then there's this, you know, whole faction of conservatives that don't agree with me, they might decide to boycott any movie I'm in and not see my movie, right?
Yep. Yep.
And what that does is it creates more and more of a divide. So if we're like boycotting certain artists because of the speech that they gave at the Oscars or whatever, then you're not seeing different films. And where that becomes a shame to me is, A, like, the last thing we need to is to be more divided. Mm-hmm. And B is, the arts in storytelling is one of the best ways to have tough conversations. And it's one of the reasons that I love what I do and I love storytelling is because it is my favorite form of communication. Because if I have a disagreement with someone, just having a debate with them or sending them articles or sending them, you know, like watching political news, that's not going to get us anywhere. But if we can like explore the issue through a story and explore the human experience of people on both sides of the issue, and then try to understand the issue through empathy and through other people's experiences and how this law might affect someone, you know, of this particular age, gender, you know, non-binary experience, or how, you know, someone else's like experience of a different religion. I think that type of exposure gives everyone better understanding of each other, of the other side. So while I am very political and I have very strong opinions, I grapple with this a lot because I don't want to push away someone who I might be able to find some common ground with otherwise. And I think having a better understanding of each other as humans and finding common ground is more important than ever. Because I think we actually agree a lot more than politicians and media want us to believe that we do. So I, yes, I think that activism is great and I think that it is needed. But I really don't want to see all of our media to become as divided as everything else is in our country.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not in the same country as you, but you know, that's my experience.
Yeah, but you know, it's, I mean, we kind of have, I mean, we do have kind of the same culture, you know, since we kind of, you know, since we come, since we are practically neighbors, you know. So yeah, I do understand what you mean. And yeah, sometimes it's so interesting that perhaps so that when you get into a conversation with someone that has totally different opinion that than yours, when you have like a decent conversation, at some point you found common ground. You know, so I do think that, yeah, we do, we should be listening more instead of, if we don't want, if we don't like something, trying to just cancel it, you know, as we have seen it, you know, that, it's okay for you to not like something, but at the same time, I mean, I think that gives the possibility for a conversation to it, you know, and to be civilized instead of having like this rampage and started to send like hate stuff, things like that, to someone who has like their opinion on something, you know? So.
Yeah, I think representation and diversity in media is so important. Exposure is so important. Not just for people who are minorities or you know, women to see their own stories told on television. That is incredibly important, but I think it's just as important for people who are not that minority to see those same stories, because it is an exposure to and a way to understand someone else's life experience. And the more you are familiar with something, the less fear you have around it, because there's so much fear of the unknown. Yeah. And so the more we can make things known, the less fear there will be.
Yeah, absolutely. And also sometimes, yeah. Totally. Wow. I mean, that could lead us to another total conversation here, because there's a lot of topics regarding that. So yeah, I do. Yeah. I like it. Now, how do you think the role of importance of, you know, of critics, film, like film critics, and do you think that will change in the digital area in which nowadays everyone can be a reviewer now?
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I don't read a ton of review. It is interesting to think, because I'll like go see what the score is on Rotten Tomatoes sometimes. I don't really read reviews. I think I'm more engaged, especially because I'm in the industry, like I'm surrounded by other people in the industry. And so I'm more likely to just have a conversation about it with people than to go read a review. But I will say I do, like when I finish a show and I want to talk about it, but I'm home alone, I'll go to Twitter or something to like go see what everybody's opinion about it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I do think it has like definitely served that, like it is a way for people to have a conversation about a film instead of, I also tend to find, I find critics a little bit holier than thou. And I also find them to be a bit film snobbish. And here comes the feminist in me, but like, for a long time where like white men were like dominating the, and still are, the creating and the directing and writing scene. And then you also have white male critics. It's just self-masturbatory to me. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm just not really interested in their opinion. And a lot of the time my opinion is different than theirs. So I may not be the best person to answer that question, except that I think there's two different things. I think, yes, social media and like Twitter and all this has been a great way to like just get involved and talk to each other about things that you're like a fan about and see what other people's opinions are and talk about theories and stuff. So I think that has replaced it a little bit. I will say then on the negative side, like it's you almost have to ignore the comments and ignore the reviews because it's like it's not healthy for anyone to see all of these, you know, million negative comments about something. And sometimes it pisses me off because I'm like, well, I liked it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, same thing here.
Yeah, I think there's positives and negatives, but
mm-hmm.
I think we need critics. Critics help. Critics and reviews help get the word out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It also helps with word of mouth and advertising. So I think that is great. But I don't really follow them personally.
Yeah, no, you understand. I mean, I do see every now and then few reviewers, but sometimes I do not, because I mean, sometimes you can totally tell there is an agenda behind to it, you know, and if you're reviewing something based on an agenda, then I don't quite like it, you know. I want something more human, you know, and I don't need something like super snob, you know, something casual and be like, this is cool because this and that, or this is bad on my opinion on this and that. You'd be like, okay, worth a shot or not, we'll see. So
yeah, I mean, I love a review that's like, here's the general vibe, here's what mm-hmm. to expect, but I'm not as interested, you know, or a review for after I've seen it.
Yep.
To
mm-hmm.
like, I want to see what, like, or what was that ending about, you know,
mm-hmm,
like I
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
those things where we're sort of like engaging in the conversation about like, what the hell was that?
mm-hmm.
But less about like, this person sucks and that person sucks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no. That's what it gets into. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, the last question here, super relaxed and easygoing after a couple of really difficult questions here and there. Super, you know, we can all enjoy and relax. Check this one. So this is it. What do you think that would be the title for this episode?
God, we talked about so many things. I would say future of the industry, or what is the thing that they call like the beginning of the year that the president has to give a like state of the something address, like the current state of affairs, or like mm-hmm. what is the name of that I'm trying to think of? Hold on, let me see if I can Google it real quick.
No, yeah, take your time. Yeah, we do have it here, but they do that every 6 months, but I don't know the words in English per se for that one. But yeah, I know what you mean.
No, not the inaugural.
No.
State of the Union address.
Oh, okay.
State of the Union address. This could be the state of the industry.
State of the industry?
Yeah, I don't
okay.
know.
Okay. Or State yeah. of the Union by Lexi.
Yeah. I guess we talked a lot about the future of the industry.
Mm-hmm. So state of the industry.
Where we came from and where are we going?
Boom. Badass. There you go.
There's a song I want to quote it, but it's kind of a racist song, so I don't want to quote it. But it's where do you come from? Where do you go? Where do you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Mm-hmm. So, where do you come from? Where do you go? But don't do that because it's kind of a racist song.
Wonder. So, where should we leave it then?
Looking forward.
Okay, looking forward. I'll tell you what. With all of the names you said, I'll be making sure that I get the chance to kind of mix it up a little bit. You know, perhaps like switching words here and there, and to make it into something. I mean, it's gonna look cool. Count on it. There you go. I mean, at the end, what can I say, Lexi? You know, it's always incredible and badass, and yeah, definitely super cool to have you back here, be chatting about, you know, like about everything. It's really amazing. I also want to thank those who stayed here this whole episode. Thank you so much. Now, also, as I said in the beginning, make sure to go follow Lexi, like right now. I mean, this episode is about to be over, so go follow her. Go check, go check what she does, and also go check on some other episodes so you can find out, as I said in the beginning, why she's a total badass. And again, Lexi, thank you so much. Keep killing it. Keep rocking. Keep shining. And I'll see you in the next one.
It's a pleasure, Dan. Thank you for all the thoughtful questions.
There you go.